Welcome to Firstline. My name is Aubrey Ann Jackson, and I am a PGY1 psychiatry resident physician. In this podcast, we discuss whole person health and wellness through an osteopathic lens, holistically addressing the body, mind, and spirit. We also discuss topics important to medical trainees, including pre-med students, medical students, and residents. Thanks for joining me. Hello, everyone. This episode is about pregnancy and discussing things that really everyone should know. Of course, many of you listening are probably pregnant yourselves and you want to hear more about it. But I think it's just good for men and women alike to understand what this process looks like and some terminology that go along with it. And especially if you're a woman yourself who's planning on getting pregnant, or you have a spouse that may plan on getting pregnant in the future, this is really useful information to know. So the length of pregnancy is usually about 40 weeks. And the gestational age, which is usually what doctors are going to be using and what, you know, you're going to be, what women are going to be using if you use any apps to track your pregnancy, it goes by gestational age, which is not actually the age of the fetus, because it starts on the first day of your last menstrual cycle. But of course, you don't even ovulate until 2 weeks after that period. So conceptional age is actually the date of the fetus that is calculated from the day of conception, but that is not the nomenclature that we use. We always measure from the first day of the last period because that is much easier to figure out than when you ovulated, because many women get pregnant and they were not tracking their ovulation. They don't know what day they ovulated, but they will be able to say what the first day of their last period was, or at least a good estimate on it. And so, yeah, the normal is 40 weeks. Anything that is before, that is between 37 and 42 weeks is considered term. Very few babies are actually due on their due date that a doctor may have given a woman who is expecting, but it's usually going to be a few weeks, give or take. If the birth is before 37 weeks, then that is considered preterm. And if it is after 42 weeks, that's considered postterm. Preterm is also commonly known as just a premature birth. The 40 weeks of pregnancy is also divided into trimesters, of course. So the first trimester is defined as weeks 1 through 13. The second trimester is weeks 14 to 26. The third trimester is weeks 27 to 40. I'm recording this episode before I actually have announced that I am personally pregnant, but this episode is going to come out after I have officially announced it to everyone. It sounds weird to be recording myself talking about this outside of my episodes that are specifically about my own journey, but I will just share like some anecdotes along the way as I talk about this. As I'm currently recording this, I'm actually 17 weeks pregnant in my second trimester, which I'll just say the first trimester, that is obviously the trimester that has the highest risk of miscarriage, especially in like the first 4 weeks. A lot of pregnancies are undetectable at all because a woman gets pregnant and then loses the pregnancy before she even misses a period, or before she's able to get the positive pregnancy test or even have any symptoms. So as the first trimester goes on, the risks get decrease and decrease. And then once you get to the second trimester, you have the reassurance that, you know, your pregnancy, if everything looks okay so far, of course, there's complications that can occur much later. But if everything looks okay so far, then your risk of miscarriage is very low. And also the second trimester is just known as being the really happy trimester because There's a lot of symptoms and just your body adjusting to pregnancy in the first trimester. And the second trimester is really known for these symptoms tapering off. For example, I have dealt with really bad nausea throughout my pregnancy. I actually have had a few weeks now that I've been feeling pretty good. But today in particular, for some reason this morning, I was feeling pretty nauseous. Don't know why. But everything else, my fatigue is much lower, my appetite is increased, so all good things. And then the second trimester is great because it's before the third trimester where you're really big and have some of the problems associated with that, like the back pain and just having to navigate life with this huge belly. I'm often asked about what question banks to use to study for medical school board exams, and I always recommend TrueLearn. TrueLearn helped me score competitively on Comlex Level 1 and Level 2, shelf exams, and the USMLE Step 1 and Step 2. And I'm currently using their question bank to study for Level 3. I love TrueLearn's practice questions because they include detailed answer explanations and comprehensive analysis of how you're doing compared to your past progress and compared to your peers. I am so happy that FirstLine has partnered with TrueLearn. For a discount on your subscription, use the link in the episode description and use code FirstLine at checkout. FirstLine. One word, no spaces, no capitalization. So I often hear this question a lot, and it was certainly a question that I had because I was, hopefully by this point I have uploaded all of my episodes describing my fertility journey, but I was obviously trying for a baby, and there's something called a two-week wait, which is just between ovulation and when your next period would be due, which is also around the time where you would get a pregnancy test. So it's basically 2 weeks after trying during your fertile window before you can even test anything. So I was definitely referring to different literature and study material from medical school about what signs to look out for, trying to analyze everything and looking additional things up online, just trying to hear anecdotes from anyone to even show a little bit of indication towards some of these signs. And this was for a few months in a row as well. And it was funny because the 2 week wait that I actually became pregnant, I really didn't have any symptoms at all. And certainly before that, there were months that I thought that I was having signs and I was really feeling optimistic. And of course, that's just how life works, that it sometimes is opposite like that. But obviously, one sign that you could be pregnant, and this is, could be you trying to get pregnant, or it could be you trying to avoid pregnancy, and then these would kind of be red flags for you. The main one is obviously not having your period, being late in your period when you usually have pretty regular menstrual cycles. For someone that has irregular menstrual cycles, it's unlikely that you're ovulating each month, so continuing to have a late period, if that's typical for you, it probably doesn't say much. Some women will experience breast tenderness as the first sign. I never experienced this symptom. Certainly as pregnancy progresses, the breasts do enlarge, but sometimes this is the first symptom that someone will have. Another common one is some constipation and bloating, which certainly had a lot of in the first trimester, and someone will have this earlier than others, and with that can come some weight gain as well. Some women will have nausea and vomiting right away. You can have cravings or aversions to foods. You can have increased urination but that's much more common once the uterus is really enlarging further into the first and second trimester. Fatigue could be something that comes up. Some women will notice a darkening of their skin in their abdomen called a linea nigra, or maybe darkening of the nipples. So all of these signs could indicate pregnancy, but really you don't really know until you get a pregnancy test. And this will be testing for human chorionic gonadotropin, also known as beta-HCG. And this is produced by the placenta. So you will not have a positive pregnancy test unless you are pregnant. The beta-HCG is very specific to the placenta. And this is usually done with urine. That's going to be your home pregnancy test. You can also get blood tests, but the urine test is not as sensitive. It's really just going to give you a positive or negative. It's either a detectable level or it's not a detectable level. And this can be detected at 2 weeks after fertilization. Though some tests will say that you can test even a little bit earlier, but I usually recommend just to wait until your missed period, because if you do test a few days early, you would have to retest anyway if it's negative, because it could be a false negative. Of course, if you do get a positive, then that's your answer. But if it's negative just because you were too early, then you would have to test a second time anyway. So might as well just test once. But the serum test or the blood test, that's usually done in a doctor's office, like your OBGYN or your midwife practice. And this is a lot more sensitive. It will have a number associated with it. And this is helpful to get multiple measurements of that to make sure that the HCG levels are doubling in the right time frame to show that there was successful implantation. And you can also get the blood test to be accurate a lot earlier than the urine test. Many times that is used as the first line test for someone going through fertility treatment. They'll just go ahead and do the blood test. So it's the beta HCG is going to double every 2.5 days or so. And the number is really going to peak at 8 to 10 weeks of gestation. And then in the second trimester, it's going to start decreasing. If you've ever seen the range of beta HCG levels, it's a very wide range. But if it is on the lower end or under the low end of normal, then it could mean a fetal abnormality, like a chromosomal abnormality, or it could mean that there's an ectopic pregnancy or that there was a miscarriage. If the beta HCG is too high, if it's towards that upper end or above the upper end of normal, then it could mean Down syndrome. Could mean that you have a tumor that's creating beta HCG, which would cause it to skyrocket. Or it could indicate that you have twins or triplets or higher levels of multiples. Really, false positives are super rare. It is very specific to the placenta. And typically, once there is a positive pregnancy test, you'll have an appointment to confirm pregnancy, either an abdominal ultrasound or a transvaginal ultrasound. Sometimes they'll try the abdominal, and then if they can't see anything, they can go to transvaginal, whereas a lot of places will just go straight to transvaginal. At 5 weeks pregnancy, you can start to see the gestational sac and not much else. Around the same time, you can see a yolk sac. Around week six, you can start to see cardiac activity. And I think a lot of practices will just wait until 6 weeks to do the ultrasound to confirm that it's in the uterus and not ectopic. And then to also make sure that there's cardiac activity of the fetus. So that's only 2 weeks after a missed period that your fetus is going to have a heartbeat. That is an amazing fact that I can never get over. And then around week 10 is when you can start to detect the heartbeat with a Doppler ultrasound. So week 6, you can use the ultrasound to detect the heartbeat, but you can't actually hear it. Week 10 is when you can use that Doppler. Often the uterus is still pretty tiny and the fetus is super tiny. So sometimes it's really hard, especially if you're on the heavier side, to detect that heartbeat through the skin. But week 10 is really the earliest that can be done. And then around week 18, which is coming up for me, you can start to feel fetal movement. Some people say that they can feel that a little bit earlier, and for some people, it's okay if that occurs even later than that, even past 20 weeks. Especially if for me, I was actually told at my last appointment that I have an anterior placenta, so the placenta can attach to the uterus. Really throughout the uterus. It can be towards the top, it can be towards the back side, towards the front side, or towards the bottom side, which is the most dangerous one. But mine attached to the front side, which doesn't really cause any danger, but it makes it a lot harder to hear the heartbeat on Doppler. And I was also told that it will take longer to feel fetal movement because baby has to kick through the placenta for me to feel it in the front. These ranges can vary a lot. And if you want to estimate your delivery date, there's an easy way to do that. Obviously, there's calculators online that make it super easy to just calculate, put in your first day of your last menstrual period. But you can also do it yourself. You just take that day of your last menstrual period. You add 7 days, you add a year, minus 3 months, or you can think of just adding 9 months. So for me, let's use me as an example, November 6th was my last period. So add 7 days, it's 13, plus a year, November 13th of 2023, minus 3 months, August. August 13th is my due date. So this is usually how due dates are determined. An ultrasound will look at the length of the fetus in the first trimester. This has to be done pretty early because otherwise it's not really helpful. And that length will determine the estimated age of the fetus. And if the age estimated from ultrasound is at a greater discrepancy than 7 days. So if there's a difference between the last menstrual period of 7 days or greater, then the ultrasound dating is used over the last menstrual period. And then that will recalculate your due date. Otherwise, if there's like 4 or 5 day discrepancy, you just go with your last menstrual period. Your due date won't change. If your due date is ever going to change, it's going to be by more than a week, okay? So I hope that this episode provided a good overview on pregnancy and some of the basics that really everyone should know and may clear up some misconceptions. I'm happy to have more episodes like this if this is something that is of interest. I am happy to share my own experience. I've been on my phone and my computer for months now, since I found out that I was pregnant, and even before that, with researching things about fertility. So I feel like I have so much knowledge now, with a combination between all of that research and what I know from medical school and what I know from working with doctors and midwives on my rotations. So I am just happy to share some of that information to some of you, and I really hope that it's helpful. Thanks for listening. I am now providing personalized assistance specifically to medical students. I can help with editing your CV for away rotations or other opportunities. I can aid in revisions for your personal statement. And when the time comes, I can help you edit your ERAS application. I will catch your grammar and style mistakes and also provide feedback on content revision so you can craft documents that make you more competitive. There are so many expensive services out there that charge hundreds to thousands of dollars on reviews, which is why I am offering a much more affordable service with different price packages based on your needs. While many services out there are led by staff members who are years to decades removed from their experience as medical students, I am uniquely positioned to help you as someone who has been through this process myself in the last year or two, and as someone with professional writing and editing experience. This is the type of service I wish was available to me. I know what it takes to make you stand out, and I know what residency programs are looking for. In addition to listening to my past episodes with tips on navigating applications, use the link in this episode description to learn more about the services I offer for individualized help. In addition to these editing services, you can add on a brainstorming session or a strategy session if you are lost and want to talk one-on-one with me about strategy or how to approach your personal statement. I also have an option right now with opting for one day delivery. That's a 24-hour turnaround for any review that you need.